Hey everyone, this is Tim Shorts of Gothridge Manor doing a lunchtime podcast, sitting in my car in a parking lot watching cars go by. Why? Because this is about the best time to do a podcast for me. I got some voicemails that I'd like to share with all of you, all pretty good. We're going to lead off with Big Joe the lawyer and his appreciation for the Big Lebowski.
Hey man, Joe the lawyer here. Halfway through the podcast and our game's coming up. I can't wait to play. Can't wait to leave the voicemail message. I'm so excited about it. I'm one of those guys who always DMing. I'm looking forward to getting you so badly. It's nice. I love The Great Imbiber. It's awesome. Big Lebowski, one of my favorite movies. I have to watch it soon before we play, at least, just to get in the mode. Because I've just declared my magic users to be a follower of this dude. The dude. And any cleric of The Great Imbiber, it's got to have a bonus to attack if they use a bowling ball. Just saying. Anyway, later, man.
That was Joe the lawyer doing his, giving us his appreciation for the Big Lebowski, getting excited for the game. I think that the game is scheduled to start not this Monday, but the following Monday. I think that's the 18th. Yeah, I think so. But, yeah, it should be a fun thing to run. I know when I made it during Christian's game and everything, I had a great time playing it. So hopefully my idea of it kind of catches on with you guys and carries over. And it seems like using the Big Lebowski is a real good jumping point off there. So sometimes that's the best way to do it when you're trying to get people in the mood, is try to use movies. Books don't usually work as well unless they're very well known, because I've noticed when I've tried to make comparisons to books, you've always got a hit and miss situation like that, where if you say a movie, you got a better chance that most people have seen it. So, but the next one, I got Shane. He's pretty excited too, so let's see what Shane's up to. Shane Ward, that is.
Hey, Tim, it's Shane. Just listening to your latest podcast about your campaign, and you just totally inspired me. As I'm listening to you, I'm starting to think, okay, I got this idea for this, and I got this idea for this, and I slowly started tuning you out and started thinking, okay, what can I do? So thank you very much for that. I have to finish the dishes really quick and start writing some shit down. And as a side note, the Ash Elves sound fucking awesome. So good job, Jason, on that one. Anyway, cheers, man. Good episode. Now I'm going to finish listening to the episode. I stopped it at 2 minutes left. Anyway.
Thanks, Shane, for calling in. I appreciate it. And don't apologize for tuning me out. Ivy does that to me all the time. So I have that effect. Yeah, I mean, the Ash Elves was a lot of fun to make. I mean, like, when Jason and I were kind of talking back and forth, and I knew I didn't want to do the typical shiny, sparkly elf. I wanted to do more of a hardcore elf, a survivor elf. You have that tinge of that otherworldliness still connected, but very much of the world at the same time. These guys scrape and kill and just to survive in the habitat that they've chosen. And I think that's pretty cool. So, and now I've got a new guy who just started following and sent me two voicemails. So I'm introducing Judd Carlman, who sent in two different voicemails and followed my podcast. And he has some stuff to say about Hobbit Saints, which is kind of cool. I kind of take that with some of mine also, where I use like lesser beings to become saints or some sort of thing. Tell you what, Petty Gods is the book for Petty Gods you can get for free, I think, in PDF and for a minimal price on any of the stores online. And it's so worth it because there's so much good stuff in there. So let me get to Judd here.
Hey, Tim. Thank you for your latest show. It kept me company while I made dinner tonight. And the noodles are still, my pasta is still boiling, so I thought I'd shoot you a message. I liked it. It sounded cool. I'm fascinated by the way that you make classes. That sounds really neat. I would love to know more about nuts and bolts and like what exactly you do and what you use as a reference and a jumping off point. Do you kind of go by already established classes and then go from there? Do you add things or do you, you know, it sounds neat. I would love to know more about that process of making the class and the real, like, you know, pen to paper nuts and bolts of how you do it. I think this is going to be the first part of two, so we're running out of time. And next up, I'll talk about halflings, hobbits. Yeah, hobbit pantheons. When 3E first came out, I ran a game and I was trying to figure out what to do about halfling gods. And what I decided to do is that I decided they had uncounted number of saints, usually of things that didn't necessarily make much sense but went together. So, like, I think one of them was the saint of, like, pie and prophecy. And it was fun. It was a fun system, and it allowed for the players to kind of, because there were a lot of hobbit characters in that game, and allowed for them to kind of interact with a huge pantheon of things, and even kind of make stuff up, because there are so many saints that, like, no one really knew them all. And it was a lot of fun. Cool. If you ever need an extra body at the table, hit me up. And thanks for recording. It's been fun listening. I had you on my Google Podcast or listener, but I didn't have you over on Anchor, so I've got you there now. All right, thanks.
Carl, thanks so much for calling in. I do appreciate it, and especially a twofer. And I'm going to get into how I make classes here in a second. I just want to thank all my call-ins. Joe, looking forward to it, my man. Shane, I hope that energy that I gave you carries you and get some stuff done and get something going. I love to see it. And again, Carl, thanks again for joining, and I hope you stick around I can help you cook more meals. So on to the main topic, guys. All right, main topic is making a class, and this one is the Hobbit Holy Man. I'm making that for Matt Jackson, who wanted a halfling that worshipped the Great Imbiber. So when you're playing BX, it's class as race, which I've come to terms with. I am not I was never a big fan of class as race. It's just too generic for me. Other people having it, you know, no problem with it. And I really don't. But when I'm running a game, though, I like a little bit more flavor, because I just don't see everybody in the same cookie cutter shape. You know, there's going to be some variables. So with Matt wanting to be a holy man or a holy, I call it the holy hobbit. I take the BX class and I add stuff onto it. I just, because I'm not good at just like tearing things all the way down and building them back up. It's definitely not one of my strengths. I'm lousy at it. I usually add too many sparklies on there, or too many ornaments and that. And my ability to edit things, because I always want to give player cool stuff, because my games are dangerous. They're dangerous. And when you're in game, there's a good chance that you're going to die. Because I roll the dice out front, and so there's no way to fudge it. Like last night, one of the guys... henchmen, one of their favorite henchmen, got killed last night, and they were hoping that if they shoved the holy potion down, or healing potion down their throat, it would bring him back. And basically, I mean, they threw the potion down their gullet, and I was like, well, now the wounds that he had are healed up, but he's still dead. You know, it's not, doesn't bring back people. When they're -3 hit points in BX, they're dead. Especially for henchmen, NPCs and monsters, once they go below zero, they're dead. For player characters, I let them go below like their con bonus, which isn't a lot, but it gives you just a tiny little bit of flexibility. So you might be able to go to -1, -2, or -3 before you can, you know, get brought back or whatever. So since I have such a kind of a brutal campaign, and I think that was the 10th henchman that died. I mean, I'm not even kidding. I think it was, it's been that many now. That I like the players to have stuff, and I want the players to feel like they do have something sort of special. Not like, you know, you've got a destiny to rule the world, but something that's kind of cool. So Matt wanted to play this holy guy. Yeah, it sounds cool. Let's do this. Let's figure it out. But one of the things I did want to do is combine cleric with the halfling. That's just a little bit too much overpowering for my sake, but I still wanted to give him a little bit of flavor of the clerical part of it. Now, I don't know how this is going to work, guys, and I kind of talked it with my other players last night. I'm going to talk to Matt about it tonight, too, a little bit before we actually get it into play. And I may change my mind before all this is done. Who knows? That's just the way I am. But I'm going to just take the halfling class, and I'm going to add this one thing to it. It's going to be called Divine Axe. And I might change that name because it sounds like I'm saying a woodcutting axe. It's axe as in A-C-T-S, Divine Axe or Divine Deeds. Well, maybe we'll go with that, Divine Deeds. And what I'm doing with that one is it's kind of going to be a generic thing. It'll be usable once per day per level. So at third level, they could use Divine Deeds three times and so on. One time for first level. But they, as long as what they're trying to do is within the purview of their god's belief, say if they have a god of war and they want to cast a healing spell, maybe there might be an issue with that. And it's not a healing, it's not like a true healing spell, but maybe he wants to stabilize somebody because the god of war might be saying, you know, you got to focus on whatever. That's a bad example. Oh, let's see, the god of healing, maybe that's better. So like you've got a god of healing and who's very passive, and I should use Matt's god, who's the Great Imbiber. He's a non-violent god for the most part. I mean, the clerics can defend themselves and whatnot, but they're not going to go out of their way to cause damage. So if a cleric of the Great Imbiber tried to cast some sort of damaging or cause some sort of damaging thing with a divine deed, it wouldn't work. It's just not going to go through. And if that happened enough, then their ability to use it would definitely be eliminated or restricted quite a bit. But say that same, the Great Imbiber, Matt's out there and he sees one of his comrades go down. Say that same henchman that I talked about earlier went down with -3 hit points, but Matt's guy said, you know, used his divine deed to stabilize him at 0 hit points. That would be perfectly, I would go, yes, that's okay. So it's going to be more of a role-playing mechanic than actually any type of roles being made. There will be, me and Rob Conley were talking about this last night a little bit. He's kind of got a system for a wish spell where he uses a die roll where depending on how much you tried to augment reality is, and then you have to roll higher to have it happen. I'm not sure if I'm going to use that mechanic. I want to have that discussion with the players and see how it's going to work out. But I have a, the way it, the first day with my new mouth. The way I'm hoping it'll work out is this will give this halfling the flavor of being a holy man. He'll be able to do some things. Like, say, you know, he's at a village and they're going hungry or something like that. Well, the divine imbiber, if he want, could create, like, so much food. Whether it's amount to feed a whole village or at least some of the people, he could probably do that and give you that vibe of being a holy person who is connected with the god. And if you did want to heal somebody, you could probably do that, tap into lesser amounts of what the spells really are. You wouldn't be able to, there would be no spell casting in this. It's directly just kind of this, you know, small effect, or sometimes definitely could be a bigger effect, especially if your life's on the line, like for the henchman. But simple acts of faith, basically. And I think that will be fun. But it's hard to quantify those kind of things. It's hard to say, here, Carl, here's my rules for this. Go for it. Because a lot of times, you know, we're playing role-playing games. We need to kind of know what the number is or how it's going to work. And I tend to make rules that are kind of ephemeral and kind of slippery and loose and smoky, and they kind of drift away. They might make a sense for a little bit, but they're not going to work every time. I'm going to try it out, though. Like I said, I'm going to talk to Matt tonight, see if it's something he's interested in. If he doesn't want to do that, then I'll figure out something. But this is how I build my classes. I try to do something along like that. So for the Hobbit Holy Man, that's what's going to, how I'm going to work it for now. And thank you for asking the question there, Carl. I do appreciate it. One of the other things I have that I can think of offhand is right now in my campaign, there's two different kinds of mages. Three, if you want to add elves into it for their magical use. But you have gilded mages, and then you have what I'm going to call street mages. And the two of them are different in several different ways. I mean, there's pros and cons to both, but a gilded mage, you have access to a library of spells, so when you want to learn a new spell, it's just going to cost you whatever to learn the new spells. For a street mage, they're going to have to find theirs or have someone be generous enough to offer them up or find a scrolls. So for them, spells are treasure. So when they find them, you know, they're definitely going to want to consider jotting them down in their spell book. The other thing is if there's legal issues, legal trouble, the Mage Guild kind of takes care of their own. So if a mage gets in trouble for casting, you know, a fireball in a tavern, because that never happens, he'll get defended by the Guild of Mages. And if he's found guilty, the guild tends to punish their own. So where street mage would be considered sort of like a, you know, a rogue outlaw mage anyways in a civilized area. Because in most civilized areas, I mean, you're going to have your mix of stuff, but unregistered. It's almost, for those of you who know Babylon 5 with the old Psycor and, you know, the unregistered telepaths, we'll just think of unregistered mages kind of in the same kind of aspect or philosophy of things. They want to try to keep an eye on them and keep it controlled because of the power that they possess and how much damage they could possibly do. But the thing about street mages is they've learned how to survive and how to be on their own. So what I do for street mages is I give the players a choice. I give them either a magic missile at first level that they can cast once per level, per day. So again, third level mage could cast this magic missile 3 times a day. Now, it's a magic missile that doesn't go up in power, though. It's not like if you cast the magic missile spell, if you're fifth level, 3 magic missiles go out and whack, 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 whack. This is just always going to be 1 magic missile, 1d6 plus 1 damage each time. But it's a very potent spell because that kind of damage can wipe out any low-level character with 1 hit for the most part. So as far as I'm concerned, street mages kind of learn to defend themselves, you know, using that kind of defense. The other thing is I also give them the choice of having the ability to cast the spell that they've already spent or they didn't have memorized. Okay, so say they know the spell in their spell book, but they're out of spells, but yet they want to cast, we'll just say fireball for the example. So that's a third level spell. So what I do for them is they can make a save versus spell to cast that spell. And if they fail or save, they still take damage. because they're using their body, the magic that's in their body to cast the thing, so it does damage. And it's 1d3 hit points per level of the spell. So basically a third level spell would cause 3d9 or 3 to 9 hit points of damage. But if you fail the spell, it doesn't go off, but you still take the damage. If you do make the save, take the damage and the spell goes off. So it kind of gives the mage a little bit of flexibility on what they can cast, but they're going to pay for casting it. It's not a simple task at all. And I haven't played with that one in game yet. That's something new I've come up with. I have been using the magic missile one, and that seems to work out pretty well. That one works pretty good. So those are kind of two things they bolt on to an existing class to kind of give a little, to differentiate the two types of mages. Even they're both, you know, they both have access to all the same spells. They have, you know, they gain spells at the same levels or whatever. All that's the same. All I do is I changed it a little bit because of the culture of it. You know, if you're a street mage, you got to find your spells. If you're a gilded mage, you go study your spells. If you're a guild mage, you have legal representation, which you would be surprised. It does come into play in mine. It depends on how wild you are with those, you know, magic missiles and fireballs or whatever. And if you're street mage, you're not, but the street mage actually, you know, gets that little bit of an edge in fighting because they've had to survive. So give them that little extra boost on the magic missile spell. So that's about it, guys. Those are two classes that I've come up with recently. I think I had to read a little bit more about the Ash Elves. I'll tell you about that probably in the next episode or sometime in the future. And then I also have Eric's playing an Exemplar, which is a Cleric of Serath, military, believes in order, all this stuff. I'll kind of go through that one too to differentiate what a Cleric of Serath is from the normal one. So, all right, guys, thank you so much for listening. Hope you're doing well. Roll some dice better than me, and we'll talk to you soon.